Well, I guess never be satisfied. You know, don't get the, I've dubbed the term, I'm sure that someone else has dubbed this, but in my circle of friends and people, I haven't heard anyone use this, but you know, the fat cat syndrome, you know, you have a great quarter, a great year, great growth. Don't get complacent.
Welcome to the Media Core Minute Podcast. My name is Josh Langmaid, and I am the owner of Media Core here in Rochester, video production agency. And I'm here with PJ. And PJ is an entrepreneur, soon to be the CEO and president of CWS, a software company in Rochester as well. Thanks for coming on today, PJ.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Josh. This is great.
Absolutely. Making it on episode five.
Number five. Wow. That's good. You guys got to five.
We're rocking and rolling. The 20 will be around the corner.
Oh, it comes quick, I'm sure.
Oh. To start, I was thinking back on, like, when was the first time that we met? And I believe it was that the Eventy launch party up in China Hall.
Yeah.
Probably 2 years ago or more.
Yeah, before the pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty... Maybe not
2019, actually.
Yeah, probably 2019 is when they had their launch party at China Hall.
Yeah, and I just met you in passing.
Yep.
You know, you're a big deal back then. I was just getting started. So
I don't know how big a deal it was back then.
No, So I met you there, and then I met Sonny, who was part of CWS at the time, and I think we got connected with him, and then I ended up going out and I shot, you know, a little promo video with you guys.
Yeah, you did. Yep. You came and sat in some client meetings and some team meetings.
That was really early on.
Captured a bunch of video.
That was one of my first, like, corporate gigs, I feel like. And, it was fun. It turned out good. But now I look back, I'm like, man, we gotta redo that.
Yeah.
But, from there, it was just... I think we just continued.
Yeah, just always kept talking and
grabbing lunch
or happy hours. And And then you guys had me over at China Hall one time to talk digital ads.
That's
and,
right.
Yeah.
Came up with a whole strategy for us. And I don't know if, I don't think we really used it because we didn't really go that route, but I still have the papers for when we start digital marketing for clients. And it has been brought up. You know, it definitely is. Something I think we can do pairing with video is the digital marketing, but...
seems like a good fit for you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just got to hire you.
Right.
CWS, just briefly touch on what that is, and then I want to get into a little bit of your history.
Yeah, yeah. So CWS, Corporate Web Services, has been in Rochester just over 25 years. We just celebrated our 25th anniversary.
Nice.
This August, right. I think, was the official date that we celebrated that. Started by Kim and Alan DeCarroll, locals here in Rochester. And I was brought on the team, I'm getting close to my 7th year anniversary. And at that time, it was digital marketing, hosting, websites, programming, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And we, you know, worked closely with Mayo Clinic on a, you know, handful of projects over the years. And slowly there was this one product that we worked with them that we kind of ran with called the Wellbeing Index. And that's now really become more of our focus and where my focus is and where we're leading the team for the future is focusing on that product, the Wellbeing Index. So that's... Absolutely. That's kind of the CWS story here. And that's why it's, you know, we're calling it now a software company because that's truly what we are and where we're moving towards even, you know, entirely 100% eventually in the future is our pieces of software that we've developed.
Yeah.
And
we'll definitely get into more of that and what you're doing. Going back and growing up, I know you've had an entrepreneurial spirit for a long time and, you know, growing up from, you know, our conversations, I know that there's been a family business in there.
Yep.
So kind of take me through, you know, you're young, you're growing up, you know, let's go over like the family business and just how that affected you and like the decisions you made just in life and like where you wanted to go.
affected me a lot in a good, positive way, I'd say. You know, both my parents were entrepreneurs. They had a business that they ran out of their house. And I always enjoyed that, loved it, you know, looked up to them when they were running businesses, and they still do today. And, you know, so it started with a Kool-Aid stand. You know, 8 years old, got some neighborhood kids. We lived in the suburbs of Chicago at the time.
Yeah.
And that was my first taste of, you know, having a Kool-Aid stand with my siblings and my friends.
And how many times did you do it? Because I feel like a lot of us have had like a lemonade stand or something like that, but it lasts like 2 hours and then like you never do
it. Oh, no. For 2 summers, it was like a summer job.
Really?
We had schedules and it was 7 days a week. As long as the weather was good, someone within our core group of friends and siblings, the Kool-Aid stand was up.
Where was it? Just outside the house?
Yeah, we lived in this pretty dense neighborhood, Melrose Park, Illinois, not far from Chicago. And just 2 blocks down the street was a very busy kind of cross street between, you know, a couple neighborhoods. And that's where we would post up. And it actually worked out really well because it had this huge shoulder. So it was basically like parking that people could pull over. And, you know, we got very strategic with it. And I think this is, you know, my parents teaching us, you know, as young entrepreneurs, hey, you know, there's always a better way to try and figure out how to get more people to come buy your Kool-Aid, you know? So our first kind of, I remember a week or so, we just were sitting at the stand, you know, but by the time people got to the Kool-Aid stand, it was already too late for them to try and stop and pull over. So then the idea came, well, why don't we get someone or a couple kids with signs to go a block up, you know, to say Kool-Aid, 25 cents, 1 block ahead, free parking available. And so then you get people slowing down and preparing, and then, you know, so it was a ton of fun, and that was kind of the first taste.
Was there regulars?
There was UPS and FedEx drivers.
Nice.
And maybe even back then, I think, you know, DHL was still pretty prominent in that service. And those were the guys that stopped quite a bit, and they'd also like give us a $20.
That's,
you know,
awesome.
There was one guy that did give us $100 one day. That was pretty sweet. But so, yeah, those were our regulars.
That's great.
Yeah. So that started, you know, 8 or 9 years old, and that kind of was the first taste of a business. And from there, there was other milestones and things that we've done.
What were your parents doing? You know, you said that they were kind of entrepreneurs as well. What was that? What were they doing at the time?
Yeah. So, my dad is a lifelong professional musician. And, during that time, my mom and dad were doing school assemblies. Mm-hmm. Elementary, middle school, and it was all drug prevention, self-esteem building, those types of kind of school assemblies. So that was their jam for, they probably maybe close to 20 years that ran. And, you know, it was in the Chicago Public School District. They started getting up into Wisconsin. My mom's from Hayward, Wisconsin, so they always did that school district. And it was primarily in southern Wisconsin, Illinois. Mm-hmm. And that's what they were doing with their entrepreneurial family business when I was growing up. And then Buttons kind of became that was the next step to our evolution of a business was, you know, my grandpa, you know, really saw us knocking it out of the park with this Kool-Aid stand.
Yeah.
And my mom had the idea that the kids could make buttons for the kids shows. Yep. And just so everyone's clear, it's like a promotional button, campaign, political button. It's the, you know, not a shirt button.
Like the sewn on kind of like one.
No, not sewn on ones.
Okay.
No, it's like a pin.
Okay. Yep. Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So promotional marketing type button. She asked my grandpa for Christmas that year if he'd buy us a button machine. And that was, you know, it was a gift for myself and my brother and my sister. And our first customer was my mom and dad for their kids' shows. We made buttons for their shows.
Nope.
But then in the summer, we kind of took that group that was selling Kool-Aid, and then that was, you know what, we live in a dense neighborhood, let's sell buttons door to door. So we got some designs we ordered and printed online and sold buttons door to door. Yep.
Like just kids
knocking on the door.
How many buttons did you have?
So we had it was like 16 or 20 different designs.
Yeah.
You know, and we probably, you know, each kid's probably carrying around a bag of 100 buttons, and we, you know, spread out, divide and conquer. And
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So did you kind of like lead this, or who is, because there's got to be someone that's still heading on?
Yeah. You know, I wasn't the oldest. I was up there, though. There was a couple kids that were the same age or a little bit older than me. So I think collectively we were kind of, you know, they were the biggest kids and all that. But I will say it was my button machine, and right. all the activities and all the planning was done at my house. So kind of naturally had that leadership type role. And that's kind of my first taste of it in yeah. life was that.
So do you think, you know, everyone kind of has like a mindset change or like a, you know, this is when the light bulb went off. You know, do you think that early on is kind of when you had your like, okay, there's something to this. There's something to, you know, business and entrepreneurship. You know, would you say it was then or, you know, had that not fully come yet?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I remember very distinctly the like aha of profit. You know,
right.
just understanding that whole thing, like, hey, for 50 cents, you can make a huge thing of Kool-Aid that sells for $20. Mm-hmm. And the difference when you take out your cost, what's left over is your profit.
Yep.
And if you just do that a bunch of times, you know, in my mind, it was like, well, if I do that 40 times, I can go get whatever I want. You know, I want to yep. get that new gaming, you know, thing or whatever it was at that time. That's kind of, I remember that moment learning that from my parents. And I think I was right around like 5 years old. And that's why when it was like 6 or 7, I started seeing the opportunity. Okay, I got some friends. Mm-hmm. I don't need to do this all my own. My siblings are older now. They can help. Let's do this Kool-Aid stand.
That's great.
So, but I think there's different milestones of aha.
All that elevates.
Yeah, as you go yep. through, you know, we had a family business and, you know, we still do. 20 some years in it, working with your siblings and your mom and your dad and your stepdad, and just everyone's involved in the same business. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, different levels of kind of, I would say, leadership. And then just, you know, responsibility that you start to learn and take on.
Right.
And there's different kind of, I'd say, things similar to that. Well, I just learned about profit. Now it's, oh, I just learned how to really, you know, bring in talent. And that process worked really well. Or, hey, I just really learned how to turn someone around from, you know, not showing up on time to now is one of our best employees. And those are different levels of kind of becoming an entrepreneur and a leader.
Yep.
You know, when I learned about profit, I wasn't thinking about, yeah. you know, being a president and having employees. And right. it was just, whoa, 50 cents this can turn into $20, yeah. you know, and so $19.50 is mine to keep. And if I do that 20 times, boom, I can go get the new PlayStation. That was kind of how I originally thought. But yeah, over, you know, I'm 36, going to be 37 in February.
Nice.
So I'm getting close to that 30 years of being an entrepreneur. And I'd say, you know, every 5 to 10 years, you have these moments that you kind of break through another level of growth.
So going back to the buttons, you know, and I know this is still around, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in St. Charles, yep. Minnesota right now.
Like, when did, you know, how did that kind of progress as you as kids selling door-to-door to where it's at today?
The birth of the internet, you know, it was that transition. You know, I'm an older millennial, I guess. Mm-hmm. I'm on the high end of the age group, and computers and desktop computers and internet connections, high-speed internet connections, all of that came out right yep. when I was in middle school and high school. So we were selling door-to-door. We were making buttons for our parents' school assemblies, and that was like years and years. And then the internet started to become a thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, my mom and their business, they always invested in, you know, the best technology. We were one of the first people on our, you know, street or in our neighborhood to have a desktop computer in our house. Nice. You know, and I remember it was some crazy, ridiculous amount of money. My dad, you know, was a little upset on the amount, but my mom was certain within like 2 years it will pay for itself. And I think it paid for itself in like the first year. She like mm-hmm. proved that, hey, I was able to send out this many more postcards. And from those postcards, we got these shows. It paid for that computer. Nope. So we always kind of had that because my mom was very much like, I need to be as efficient as possible and, right. and invest in the technology and just make it pay for itself. So she had a computer. Then we started hearing about the internet and we got connected and she learned HTML and we were I don't know for sure, but looking back and I've done a little research, just, you know, see if I can find stuff on Wayback Machine or find anything that can refute this. And I haven't,
yep.
but from our understanding, we were the first button company to have a website in America.
That's sick.
So we had a one-page HTML website. You know, she taught herself how to do HTML to get a website up. And then before you know it, we were taking orders over the phone from all over the country.
That's insane.
And every year it just, you know, kind of got bigger and bigger and bigger. And here we are today.
Wow. So what does it currently look like? You know, I don't want to get too much into it, but today, what does that look like?
Yeah. So, you know, it's grown into being kind of, you know, a full print shop, and mm-hmm. we've got, over 5,000 square feet of warehouse and production space in St. Charles, yep. right on Main Street there. And, you know, we do everything you can think of in a traditional print shop and promotional product standpoint, but buttons are still the main,
yep.
you know, product that we sell. And
who's currently like running it? Like the
day-to-day? Yeah. So my mom and stepdad are still, you know, still there and running the day to day, and my brother and sister are still there as well. Nice. You know, with the pandemic, our staff has shrunk a bit. You know, with mm-hmm. without big events and you know right. the last election, there weren't all the big rallies and all the stuff that we used to do.
Right.
So we've shrunk a little bit in size. So I'm not sure where they're at because I'm not really a part of the day to day. Anymore, but yeah, it's still up and running. Sound like they're busy.
I mean, it's got to be cool though for you growing up just to see, how, you know, being having parents that are entrepreneurs, starting this company, seeing where it grew, you know, milestones like the internet breaking through mm-hmm. and you know just the growth of that had to be really cool. Dude, I don't even know this yet. Did you end up going to college? Hmm. Because I don't think we ever even talked about that.
So I did, and it was totally not the cool thing to do like it is like today. Yeah. But right out of high school, and primarily because I had the family business to go right into. You know, I was already a salaried employee. It's making good money. And I wanted to really see what I could do with that. But I did. I did online school for 2 years, got all my generals done. And then after that, just never completed that. So I guess you'd say I'm a college dropout is my title.
Like all the greats.
Basically. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So when was there like the shift into CWS then? Cause you've been there, like you said, almost 7 years now.
Yeah. You know, I was getting close to turning 30 mm-hmm. and I don't know, just woke up one day, had this thought of, you know, something happened to my mom and stepdad and, yep. no one really could vouch for my work, you know, and I don't have a degree that's, you know, says I've accomplished something, you know, that I can maybe take there. So I kind of was, you know, feeling like I should explore and see what's out there and maybe try something to get more skills and knowledge. And so I actually looked at a couple companies in town and just looked at what positions they had opened. And at CWS, because at the Button Factory, I was kind of our main technology person. Mm-hmm. You know, I was doing all the marketing and digital ads and running our Google Ads campaigns and things like that. But then when it came to like, you know, programming and hosting and websites, I learned that stuff too. You know, I was kind of the person that, and we kind of had this model that someone in the family always needs to know every little element, you know, like so that at the very least the family can run the entire
operation.
Everyone
gets their own aspect to the company.
Yeah. And my mom too, we were always ones that like the more that we know the better, you know. You know, so I would even learn years after not running the press, I'd still come back and do the initial training and learn how to do it just in case, you know, I could show up if need be.
Yep.
But so I actually applied at CWS for a programming position and an open sales position. Mm. So I went through their interviewing process and got offered the sales position and I took it. So mm-hmm. that's kind of how I made that transition over there.
So you were working at the Button company and but like you just wanted something different or something new mm-hmm. or maybe like that, you know, okay, like this is like we're growing, but it's, you know, what else is out there kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So you get the job at CWS doing sales. And at the time you were selling, like you said, CWS was more digital marketing, web-based services, things like that. How long had CWS been in business at the time?
So that would be like 19 years when I got hired. They were 19 years old. Yeah. Cause I remember it was maybe after my first year, we did the 20th anniversary kind of promotion and thing that we did. So.
And how big was the team?
Oh man. When I think I got hired, we were more than 20. I think we were in like 22, 23
yep.
people. And I got hired at a wave where they were like hiring a lot. There was, because I was one of maybe three or four salespeople that came on at that time. There was maybe two or three marketing people that came on in that time, like with all in a, there's, oh yeah, another, a programmer came on within maybe 4 or 5 months. Wow. So there's like this little period of hiring that CWS was pulled a bunch of people all on at the same time. And I was kind of part of that group.
So where, you know, obviously you've moved up throughout, you know, these 7 years that you've been there, you know, we'll get into that. Do you think part of like the, cause even, you know, even myself, like I've had a business now for 4 years or whatever it is, but like every place I've worked, I feel like I've progressed very quickly. And, I don't know if that's just like the hunger of an entrepreneur or something like that, but I mean, did you feel that when you came into CWS as a salesperson and now going into next year as a CEO of it, like what was part of like, you know, that driving force for you?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I think to your first question, yeah, that was quick, you know, like ascension in, you know, a handful of years.
Right.
But yeah, it, you know, for me, it was, and this is my side of the story. You know, I think just being open, asking the right questions, and, you know, I was always curious of, you know, why are we doing it that way? Or what's that little product over there? You know, what's that about? Why aren't we selling that more? Or, hey, I found this new way or this new service we can offer that I think provides a better service to our customers and might make us more profitable. And so I think those types of things are part of the reason that, you know, I kind of moved up quickly, which I feel definitely I moved up quickly. You know, my mindset, you know, when I got hired, first I was like, all right, I'll probably be in the sales position 3 years, you know, and then we'll see where we're at. And if there's no chance to move up, you know, then maybe I'll start looking somewhere else. But it was really like, hey, I'll be at this entry level position for 3 years, you know, and that was kind of my mindset coming in because I had zero experience, you know,
in sales,
you know, I was doing marketing and at the button factory, I, you know, would answer the phone and take an order, but it wasn't anything outbound. You weren't really, people knew what they wanted. They'd already seen it online. They were just calling to help you, have you help them through the process, you know? So it was more order taking than anything. But when I got on CWS, it was more of, hey, you got to be out and network and get to know people. And here's this person.
It's all B2B.
Yep.
You know, CWS. Yep.
Yep.
And so part of that, like, what was the main thing, like main things that you were selling?
Websites and custom programming. That was like the very first thing that kind of was on my plate. I was, had the aptitude because I knew how to code to an extent. Right. You know, I don't like to say I know how to code because there's experts and I have, you know, the guys on the team are great at it and I know where compared to that, but I understood the language enough that I could speak it and explain it to people. And then, yeah, just websites and then the hosting. That was basically it. And then within, you know, a few months, then it more evolved into marketing. And we use HubSpot, and that's, you know, our CRM and marketing platform that we use. And we're a HubSpot partner. So that was another thing that we were kind of selling their packages. And they came out with this service called Growth Driven Design. So that was another thing that, like, I took lead on and felt like this was a great service to offer the customer base. And so, yeah, I think that's what really it was at that time. And, and over the years, we've kind of transitioned.
So
still transitioning.
Propelling forward, you know, you said, you know, there was, you thought it was, you were going to be in that entry, you know, entry position for 3 years. What did it actually look like? How did your 7 years go?
Oh, in reality?
Yeah.
So it was probably a year and a half into it. Alan, and it's kind of funny because him and I kind of operate very similarly. And I think that's why he felt comfortable, you know, texting me kind of in the middle of the night, or it was actually really early in the morning. But I had already seen, because I was up late before, that he threw something on my calendar for like the next morning. But it was like at midnight, you know, it was in the, like way late. And I was actually really nervous. Because earlier that day, we had an issue with one of my clients that, you know, customer service mishandled something. And I had sent an email to the customer service team kind of letting them know, like, hey, moving forward, I'll handle all communication with this particular customer.
Right.
And so I thought I was actually going to get reprimanded for like kind of stepping out, you know, yeah. on their toes and getting into their,
tell
their wheelhouse.
Yeah, this is what's going to happen.
So I was really nervous. I didn't sleep much that night. And I got in that morning and Alan, you know, really painted the picture of kind of where he thought the future was for the company at that time. And, offered me the opportunity to join the leadership team.
Yep. Which was how many people?
At the time, so it's Kim and Alan. So those two, and then there were three others. So yeah, so it was a team of five at the time, and I was going to be the sixth leadership.
This was
member.
A year and a half in.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep. You know, and to me, I think timing was right. You know, I was right. the first of the new sales guy crew, so I kind of got my first pick of the. The leads list of yep. the customer list of opportunities. And, I hit, you know, I had some great opportunities come through that I was able to help. And, so I think that played into it, but then again, it was also, I was asking a lot of questions. I was just always looking to try and improve wherever possible. I was getting pulled into other areas and helping the team out and, because I had experience with SEO and digital marketing, and sometimes the production side would run into a roadblock or have questions. And instead of, you know, trying to find someone out in the community, I was like, well, hey, I can help. I got a little experience in that. So I joined the leadership team about 18 months into it. And from there, I've kind of slowly ascended as, you know, opportunities have opened up and the company's kind of product offerings and services have kind of changed and evolved. I've just kind of continued in, you know, taking on more and more roles and responsibilities, just like, you know, my entrepreneurial, you know, soul yeah. always kind of does.
And that's, you know, that's probably, you took in that same, you know, drive that you had before into that leadership role. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, in general, I mean, employees can either thrive, you know, and like really succeed in working, you know, or you can just kind of skid by and do, hey, this is what I was hired to do and I'm going to do it and I'm going to do it good enough. And I'm going to go home.
Yeah.
You know, and then some people are okay with that. Some people prefer that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some that are like, okay, but there's more, you know, and
yep.
I have to go for it kind of thing and pursue it.
I totally agree. Not that there's one way that's better or worse.
Right. I mean, you need both.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, but for me, you know, my personality type and how I operate, I just can't do it any other way.
Yep.
You know, there's a book that I read twice now, Good to Great.
Yeah.
First time I didn't get much out of it. Or from the leadership standpoint, it was more like tactically, what were they doing to get their company to scale and the stories behind that type of those tactics. That's what the first time I got. Second time, I totally struck me with the level five leader, you know, company first mindset, not to the detriment of your family, you know, or where you're burning out type of thing, but where you're always making decisions based on what's best for the company. And to me, I've always felt like I just have always naturally done it. And that book was the first one to really put words to what I've always felt like, well, I can't do it any other way. You know, if there's a goal to go hit and it takes 12 hours to get it hit that day, then I'm going to put in 12 hours and work that day.
Right.
You know, and that's what it takes to get the job done. That's what it's going to take. And that's, you know, as a family business, that's how, you know,
and I'm they noticed that
I'm raised and trained and
nope.
I enjoy that. It's not like it's a drag. It's exciting. You know, like you said, the drive, I enjoy it a lot.
Are you a guy that if you're not like progressing, you get kind of bored quickly?
I don't know. You know, I always got to be like growing, you know, like my knowledge and, but I would say as I've, gotten older, I'm okay with the, all right, I just, you know, for example, I just finished reading, you know, Good to Great.
Yep.
I don't need to jump into the next book immediately. I want to let this percolate and be the freshest thing in my mind until I can implement or change some of the things that while I was reading it or while I was going through it, that I said I wanted to do.
Right.
Whereas, you know, I think even 5 years ago, it was, you know, one to two books a month. And then I felt like, oh man, I've got way more ideas and tactics and things to do than I can even get done. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, I'm always driven and want to, but I'm okay with kind of taking it a little bit slower and and letting it percolate more. And
I mean, I think that's part of that is even just like just learning over the years. And I mean, slowing down to move quicker, you know, is a big concept. And even, you know, I don't do that enough. I'm still, again, 4 years into, you know, this journey, and we've grown fairly rapidly.
Yeah.
And part of that is just because the sheer hustle and, like, you know, the time that you're putting into it. But I think things that you learn during your journey, you know, and you're, you know, you said you're 37?
36, 37, 30, February.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I just turned 27.
Like nice.
A couple of days ago, yeah. And it was just like, you know, what can I learn over, like, these next 10 years? Mm-hmm. And how am I going to think differently? And there's probably a lot more strategy and things that just go into it. But it's like right now, it's like, let's just go.
Yep.
And, but no, I like that. Yeah, slowing down to move quicker.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's a great way to put it.
Yep. So part of the leadership, you know, team, you've been growing over these last 7 years. When did the company shift into the well-being index?
Sure. It was the day after Thanksgiving, 3 or 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. COVID always throws off my perception of time. Like,
it was
before COVID, but was it 2 years before COVID or 1 year?
Yeah.
It's somewhere in there. And leading up to that Thanksgiving break, Johnny Yukis, my Tell My Music, he's our chief process officer at CWS. That's his day job. Mm-hmm. While he's not out with the My Tell My Music crew putting on live music here. Him and I had, you know, kind of been asking a few questions, getting a little more curious about the product, the Wellbeing Index, which at the time was a project we had worked on with Mayo Clinic. Two doctors over there created the scoring system, the questions. It's a 9-question survey that measures burnout amongst healthcare workers and professionals. And we made it into the digital version. So they contracted us to program it out.
Yep.
And Alan, you know, saw the opportunity in it and licensed it from Mayo as an exclusive license for us to market it, resell it, you know, kind of bring it to market.
Right.
And, you know, Alan was the only one kind of real, you know, doing it on the side. It's kind of a little side project. There was a couple trade shows that Dr. Derby and Dr. Schenefeld, the two co-developers of the tool, were speaking at that, you know, Alan would go and do a trade show, but it was totally outside of the current team of CWS. You know, he was kind of one man showing it, you know, for about maybe the first year and a half.
Do you think he was just like testing the waters?
Absolutely.
At the time?
That's exactly what it was.
I have a team that's just solid. Yep. They're doing their thing. This is kind of interesting. I want to see where it goes.
That's exactly what it was. You know, we were doing a few million in revenue over on the CWS side, marketing, websites, hosting, all that kind of stuff. The company was running, you know, quite well.
Yep.
So he was testing it for sure. Johnny and I, we were aware of it. A few things would come in, kind of get into the production side of things to bring on some new customers. And we started asking questions. And I would say a couple weeks before Thanksgiving, we kind of threw in like, you know, we'd like to dedicate some of our time to this, you know, kind of think about it, Alan.
So you two just met with Alan.
Yeah. We just kind of, I think we just even threw it in an email where it's just like, hey, we think if we could, you know, put 20% of our effort towards this, you know, cause we knew like the website needed a little bit of updating. It didn't have much, you know, marketing or onboarding process. You know, it was kind of pretty sketchy, you know, it wasn't
a little bit thrown together.
Yeah. You know, and it was just a test market, you know? So day after Thanksgiving, Alan shot us a text and was like, hey, I know it's Thanksgiving weekend, but you guys think you can hop on, you know, sometime midday on Friday and I want to talk to you guys about something. And we hopped on and, you know, Alan said, yep, let's do this and let's set a goal for, you know, 10 years. Let's try and get to 1 million assessments or, you know, 1 million surveys done within the tool. And, I'll never forget Johnny and I were kind of on the side, like, a million, like, in 10 years, that's 100,000 a year. Like, I don't know if we're going to be able to do that. Well, we're like on pace to actually probably beat that now that we're 4 years into really focusing on it.
That's awesome.
But yeah. So from that day forward, Alan was like, yep, you guys put some effort aside, you know, and kind of like that.
Still not fully.
Not fully yet. Yep. You know, it was kind of at that time, it was 80-20, you know, like 80% still do the day to day.
Right.
That's getting money in the door now. And then go ahead, put 20% of you guys' effort, kind of start getting the other team members into it.
And that's a big thing for a company that established with that much clientele and that much revenue to go, let's start just pivoting and just completely do something different.
Yeah.
You know, and like part of that, obviously there was struggles within that. What kind of things did you face, you know, in that transition that were struggles that you had to kind of overcome? Because I mean, that's a big shift. That's a
absolutely
large deal from employees to current clients to, I mean, everything.
Yeah. So the transformation from, you know, digital agency to software as a service company, for sure. The biggest challenge for me, and it wasn't unexpected. It was totally expected, but was the turnover. Mm. So you hire people to come into the marketing agency company. And then you start to pivot to something that they might not have even signed up for or would have even applied if that was the job when they got to. So there definitely was some turnover due to the transformation on that. And of course, anytime you have turnover, it's a struggle. It's going to be a hiccup. It's going to slow the roll, especially the leadership team. We tend to take on the extra work as much as we can. Hey, that project manager leaves. All right, Johnny's filling in for all those projects now. Oh, that salesperson leaves. Guess who's getting all those now? PJs, you know. So that was and still is our biggest challenge and speed bump.
How have clients taken that shift?
Well, you know, we haven't cut off our past services yet. So haven't gotten to that point yet, but you know, right now we have a content management system that we developed internally. Anyone that wants updates to that now, we're basically telling them like, hey, this is going to go away, and we're not going to do updates to this. We need to get you into something that's a little more flexible. And you know, right now it's all WordPress, so it's like, hey, let's just get you into WordPress, and then you've got a platform that works well wherever you might go.
And doing it just, you know, obviously over time and the best that you can.
Yep.
To keep them.
Yep. Absolutely. And that's where we are right now. We're at the stage of, hey, you want some, you know, something new done with your website? All right, let's get you into WordPress and then let you know that, hey, you can now manage your site on your own. You don't need us.
Right.
And we're just trying to kind of help each individual customer that we have go through that transformation as well.
Yep. Because, I mean, obviously you want to take care of, you know, customers and everything like that, but you're also trying to not neglect just the growth of the well-being index and where you see the potential of that going.
Absolutely.
You know, at the same time.
Yep.
So just kind of juggling that, you know, all at once. What have been some of like the key growth strategies in taking the well-being index and, you know, growing it over what, the last 3-4 years now?
Yeah. Key strategies. Well, I don't know, we do HubSpot. I mentioned that before. Mm-hmm. Marketing automation. That I think has been huge for us, especially when we've been faced with turnover. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we continue to have now that we're 3 or 4 years in and it's been built and running for 3 years now. Yeah. There's always a flow of inbound opportunities coming in. Mm-hmm. In fact, more than we can field at this point.
Yeah.
You know, I hear other places that do sales, do B2B sales, might not have that volume or that flow. So I think that's one thing. We do a lot of that via marketing automation. Hey, they fill out a form, they go through this 5 to 7 email workflow, Mm-hmm. So over the course of 6 months, that's continuing to educate, provide more resources. Okay, now they fill out another form, or they demo, or they request pricing. What does that trigger now? Right. And all this is happening in the background, even before any salesperson, any customer or client success rep has ever touched it.
Yep.
And then, you know, our...
So a lot of that was automated.
Yeah, yeah, yep. And the prospects and the opportunities when they do need help and they do reach out to a person, you know, especially, you know, if it's our sales team,
yep.
They're way more educated. You know, it's less of a sales process and more of just like, well, let me just take you through the process of getting the tool. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's another benefit of us and having this license is it's exclusive. If you want the Wellbeing Index, we're the only spot you can get it. And so people
kind of nice.
Reach it. Yeah, it is. You know, now there's other tools out there that compete with us, yeah. But we're the only ones that have the Wellbeing Index.
Yeah, I was going to say like the CWS had to play like a big, you know, basically the information that you guys knew and were doing had to be pretty prominent in like how fast the Wellbeing Index grew just by taking like what you knew from digital marketing and web development and programming. And like, it had to be, you know, pretty quick change because you had the talent already.
Yeah.
To be able to do a lot of it.
Yep.
You know?
And I think, you know, I'd say the OGs that have continued that were hired when it was the agency and that are mm-hmm. still there today and crushing it with the Wellbeing Index, have said it before. And I agree totally it's fun to do it for yourself,
right.
You know, whereas before we get, you know, a customer come in and it's all about their business, you yep. know? And I remember at one point,
that's interesting.
Yeah. We'd have a team of us that would, you know, kind of, you know, we had a couple teams and you'd have 7 or 8 customers all at the same time running. And mm-hmm. so you'd have to pivot from one, you know, industry type of persona you're targeting and now move to another one, you know?
Well, I feel like that happens so much. Cause like if you're in a service-based, you know, industry, like you're serving your clients before yourself mm-hmm. typically.
Yep.
And, you know, I think about that, you know, with our stuff, it's like, oh, you know, we got to do a new commercial, a new ad or something like that and put something out. And it's just like, okay, but that comes behind every client project.
Right.
And, you know, and like the new ones constantly come in. So it's like this game of like cat and mouse, just trying to catch up on client work mm-hmm. to get some time to do our own stuff, you know? And
yep.
it's just an interesting point to go like, because it is, it is more fun sometimes to go, you know, oh, we get to spend some time on doing this for ourselves now and
yep.
creating that. So yeah, that's an interesting point. Because it happens a ton. I just don't like think about it. It's just
yeah.
like, obviously we're going to take care of our clients kind of thing. So digital marketing and automation, those are, we'll hit each one of those kind of separately. But I know that you have just, you know, history doing some of that stuff. How do you think, and obviously you've talked a little bit about how CWS has used it and how the Wellbeing Index has used it. Where do you think like digital marketing just for any company, any person, like where, how is that lacking for like so many, you know, companies or like what could they be doing in like a digital space that they're not?
Ooh, that one's tough, you know, because of course the consultant in me is like, well, depends on your market, depends right. on your budget, you know,
and a lot of it does.
And it does. Yeah. But I'll say this, you know, the first thing is as a business owner, as a small entrepreneurial business, you know, thinking about tapping into testing the waters in digital marketing, you got to know who your ideal customer is. You got to know, you know, whether it's, you know, you want to call it your persona, your ideal
avatar,
customer, whatever it is,
yeah.
you got to have that written out. You got to understand that because that dictates so much of what channel, what medium, how much effort it's going to take. You know, that I think a lot of companies, a lot of people miss sometimes. You see miss with like B2C.
Yeah.
It's a little harder in B2B, but again, B2B, if you ask someone, you know, hey, who's your target? Oh, everyone is. Well, that's not necessarily true. You don't want everyone.
Well, and there's like the whole rule of thumb. If you market to everyone, you're marketing to no one.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, that's something that we've taken in the video industry and really gone like, sure, you can do a video to do a video, but, you know, where's the strategy behind that?
Where does it fit in?
Where does it fit in? Like, and then so much of it is sitting down and going, who are we trying to reach? And what does that message look like that we need to get in front of them? You know, because it's so specific. It's like, sure, you can do just a blanket educational thing, but if you really have a specific purpose and you're using video as a tool, it's super targeted.
Oh yeah.
And but even in automation, like, I feel like that is like people are understanding, okay, I should be using digital marketing, digital advertising, things like that. Automation though, I feel like people are way behind on. Even ourselves being in this industry and being just young in profession, it's like I literally just started this whole automated email campaign, you know, using a couple different softwares. Mm-hmm. And like great leads are coming from it and I don't have to be doing anything with it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's just mind blowing. Like what, how, you know, and why have I not been doing this for longer? Just what's your take on like automation and like, you know, business strategies and like how more people could implement that into their companies?
Yeah, I think at a high level, it's, you know, you don't want to have all your eggs in one basket. So if you're, you know, a legacy old company and you guys do cold calling and that's your jam, yeah, that's great. You probably should continue to do that if it's seeing results. Mm-hmm. But you probably should also be looking at where's the future and what's the next channel to tap into, because maybe someday you can't do cold calling anymore or something happens where that doesn't work or it's not as effective. So,
and it can also supplement it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so that's my motto, you know, so we've added automation levels within our stuff, you know, to help scale it, like you said, so that there's more opportunities flowing in that didn't take a lot of human effort. You know, it's a set it and forget it for a little while type of motto. Mm-hmm. A little while means because you want to go back and revisit and fine tune, and it's never perfect. And then
there's usually a lot of like steps in setting it up.
Yeah.
A lot of tweaking.
Yeah. I'd say the initial setup does take some thought and some effort, but again, it really doesn't need to if you don't want it to, because you get it out, test it for a few weeks, you're going to tweak it anyways, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I think automation is one of those channels that should be a part of your strategy, however you do it, whether it's with a, you know, enterprise level tool like HubSpot, or you're using MailChimp's, you know, workflows and you're using that, both accomplish similar goals and can have the same kind of output.
Mm-hmm. I fully agree with that. Yeah. Moving into employees, mm-hmm. you know, part of being on the leadership team, that's been, just, you know, some of what you've done, correct? Just
absolutely,
you know, the hiring process and whatnot. How has hiring and like retaining, because like one thing is hiring, the other is retaining. Mm-hmm. You know, how have those played into like the success of CWS and, you know, into the well-being index? And how does culture fit into that?
Sure. All right. So you asked a couple questions there.
Yeah.
Well,
oh, I always do that.
Yeah, culture, I'll say, is, you know, probably the most important in all aspects of the hiring and retaining process. And then hiring and retaining talent, absolutely, it's instrumental. You know, there's clear points in our, you know, trend lines where you can see where there was turnover. Mm. And then you can see where, all right, we hired two new people. And then it took them a few months to get, okay, now those two people are ramped up. Now look at where we're at, you know? So both are very important. Both are things that I'm still learning and growing to do. You know, but again, I've always been of the mindset, and this is something that, you know, I was taught by other great leaders and kind of put together. And, you know, I've got a moral responsibility as a leader to do what's best for the people that I have, you know, chosen and been a part of choosing to join the team. And if I'm, you know, on that leadership team, I want what's best for them no matter what. And I expect in exchange for that, that when you are giving us your 40, that you're giving us your best too. Mm. Okay. No matter what happens, if you decide or we decide this isn't a fit anymore, mm-hmm. we're going to work together to find the next step to help that person. So, you know, we've had turnover, and a lot of that I'd say attributes to the transformation that we've gone through as a company. But all of those turnovers, all of those people, especially, you know, people that I've hired or been a part of that hiring process, I feel like have been both when we've hired them, they've helped us grow as a company, helped the leadership team grow as a leadership team, because, you know, you learn from every person and hiring experience you got. But then those people going on have learned from us as well. And to me, that's like, that's great. You know, so I do get a little hurt when people leave, but it's more just like, oh, the Band-Aid stings for a day. And then it's like, okay, no, you know, like, great for that person. They got a great opportunity. I hope I was a part of them, you know, growing to get that opportunity. Yeah. And I'm excited to go and help another new person come on. Mm-hmm. You know, and just that's kind of the way I look at it, you know, 12 hours after I've heard the news. Because the first 12 hours, I'm usually like, oh, darn it. Like, crap, you know.
I mean, you put a lot into your employees.
Absolutely.
In general. I mean, there's a lot of time, energy, relationships, mm-hmm. and just a ton that goes into it. So, you know, and you always hear, you know, you're working for your employees, you know, and it's just, it's big because, you know, if you really think that way, you know, that you have to take care of them and lead them in a way, mm-hmm. you know, because they're letting you do your thing and like live a certain life. So like in a way, like really looking at it as we work for them, I think has been a part of even like our culture here. Mm-hmm. It's like employees are so important, and just like the relationships and creating that work environment that they like and everything like that. That's been interesting. It's also been one of the hardest things that I've learned just about business and growth, because, you know, the more employees that we get, the more issues that come up, the more, you know, legal stuff that we have to deal with, the more insurance, and, you know, it's just like, there's a lot of growth and a lot of learning in hiring, you know, and in firing.
Absolutely.
That you have to go through. I want to hit on motivation quick.
All right.
What gets PG up in the morning, just freaking ready to rock, crush the day? What excites you?
Yeah, good question. I've been asked this before, and I think it changes every time I get asked. you know, from the work aspect of things, you know, I love doing my best or trying to achieve my best, and but know that, hey, there's always another level of growth to go, and never being, you know, satisfied. I love that, you know, that's, you know, on a personal note, that's my wife and kids and family, you know, that's usually what wakes me up first and what gets me going. And that's, you know, I don't think, you know, and it's hard to tell in another world, the type of individual or person I would be without them, you know, and that's really what motivates me to just keep on keeping and chugging along and doing my best at work and trying to achieve, you know, as high as achievements and growth as possible, you know, so ultimately that, you know, my kids can have, you know, a great future and my wife and I can have a great life and all of that can be done together. And
absolutely,
you know, and I kind of got the flexibility and the, I'd say the work culture to support that and have that all be, you know, what do they call it? Work life integration. Mm. That's good. That's, you know, it's great where I'm at. So I think that's what is another piece on the personal side that
keeps
me
excited.
Motivates me every day.
That's great. So future of the company.
And I like winning. Sorry. That's
huge.
I love to win.
That's a good point. You know, I don't ask that enough because like, I feel like that's a key, you know, part of just like how hungry someone is or I don't know where they get to or whatever. It's just like this, dogmatic urge to win.
Yep.
It's just like, but yeah, future of the company, where CWS is going, where the well-being index is going, you know, going into 2022, you're stepping in as the CEO.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, great. Congrats for that.
Thank you.
And what does that look like going into next year and this future?
Yeah, you know, we'll still continue to do websites and hosting and email, probably for another few years. Haven't really put an end date or anything on that yet. Mm-hmm. We still have capacity and all the equipment and all the skill set and the team to support that, you know, for the next few years, I'd see. But again, that can change. You know, anything can change.
Right.
But with the well-being index, you know, we're trying to continue to grow, you know, adding 10, 20 customers a quarter. That's kind of one of those big goal thresholds that we haven't quite been able to hit. We've hit it here in spots here and there, but you know, that's, you know, where we'd like to try and get our growth rate to if we could, you know, but you know, for me, it's as long as we have good, steady growth and we're continuing to grow our annual recurring revenue, which, you know, for me is most important for us to be, you know, fiscally responsible and sustainable and continue being able to grow and retain and hire great talent and have a great work culture and company. That's kind of where we're at. You know, we're going to be hiring again, you know, as we get into early Q1, you know, so expanding the team.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, that's our 2022, I think, is another year of good, consistent, solid growth and growing the team.
Yeah. Yeah. And it'll be interesting for you and like just your personal growth, just kind of stepping into that role.
Yeah. I think for me, you know, in that role, it's going to be a lot of figuring out, you know, what roles and skill sets and people to add to offload or delegate down some of the day-to-day tasks that I've been doing is, you know, with my current position, chief strategy officer, and, you know, which I still like doing my digital marketing things and running some campaigns, you know, I get, that's kind of fun. But again, I understand that there's going to be other roles and responsibilities I'm going to be, responsible for. So, that's going to be another thing for me personally as a 2022 kind of growth is, yeah, delegating that stuff to new people.
That's one thing that a lot of entrepreneurs coming up don't always think about is like the, you know, you start because you're good at something and you like doing something. Mm-hmm. If you're lucky enough to have that turn into a company with employees, there is a lot of sacrifice within being, you know, the owner or the CEO or the person running it that it's like you don't always get to do the things that you originally enjoyed doing or originally why you even started it.
Yep.
Because you have responsibility now to do other things to keep the business going and the growth moving.
Right.
And
like how much video are you editing now?
Right.
How much video are you filming now? Right.
You know, and that's the thing. Like I don't really shoot. I don't edit at all really anymore. And the podcast has actually been fun because I've actually gotten to edit and be a part of shooting these. But yeah, it's just like, I didn't realize that. And the more I read even, you know, different books, I forget which one it was specifically, but it just brought up that point that like things are going to change. And as a business owner, if that's truly what you want to be, there's a lot of sacrifice within that, that you have to do. But I mean, just in general, PJ, it's been awesome having you on.
Yeah, thanks.
I know that I've taken a lot away. I hope a lot of, you know, listeners have
had
some sweet nuggets that they can...
I hope there are some good nuggets in there.
...learn from. Oh, absolutely. as you know, a lot of the people listening are in business or in entrepreneurship or in just growth in general. What would you leave a listener with? It's always the fun thing because it just comes out of nowhere. But what would you leave someone with that's listening? Just advice on kind of their journey.
Well, I guess never be satisfied. You know, don't get the, I've dubbed the term, I'm sure that someone else has dubbed this, but in my circle of friends and people, I haven't heard anyone use this, but you know, the fat cat syndrome, you know, you have a great quarter, a great year, great growth. Don't get complacent, you know, because, well, as we've seen, a pandemic can hit and throw a wrench in everything. So, I look back on the Button Factory, you know, and our growth over 20, 25 years as well. And yeah, there was probably a few years where just all of us, we hit huge, huge growth, you know, things and growth years. And we probably missed a few opportunities to use that for further growth versus, you know, all right, you know, getting kind of complacent and
right.
Fat cat syndrome, you know, sitting back, patting the belly, feeling good.
That happens a lot.
Yeah. You know, so that's the one thing I would say, you know, because even me, I think there was a turning point. You know, I mentioned it earlier, some of the milestones as you grow as a leader and as an entrepreneur, where I realized we were in that rut. And it was like, nope, I want to keep going. I'm a skinny cat right now, you know, and I got to get myself back into that mindset. So that for me is, yeah, don't get complacent. Don't ever think enough is enough. If you've got the drive and the ability and, you know, especially if you got employees, you know, I personally feel like, hey, you're morally obligated to keep driving and pushing, you know, because you're the lid. If you stop, well, now you just put a lid on everyone else that's working with you on that team. Mm-hmm. So, and you'd be better off just stepping aside if at that point you're the lid. Put someone else in that position that's not going to be a lid.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's me. That's the one. Yeah, don't get complacent.
That's good.
Avoid fat cat syndrome.
Because it happens. I mean, it's happened to me. You see little bits of success,
sure.
And you start to go, okay, this is working, but then you don't push as hard, and then it backs off, and then you're like, what happened? And then you realize pretty quickly that you have to stay on it.
Yep.
So I like that. Again, appreciate you coming on today. For the listeners, if you've enjoyed this episode, please share with friends, family, whoever you think would benefit from listening, and as always, we appreciate you listening, and thanks again for coming on, Pete.
Yeah, thanks, Josh. This was great.